some of you may listen in last fall when we gave an overview of SATA, which is archived on our Clue-In studio. Today, based on feedback from that seminar, we are going to focus on capabilities for using SATA for risk assessment and the knowledge required to make informed decisions from that SATA output. Today, we're privileged to have several instructors, three instructors today. First is Tom Peruker. Tom Peruker received his PhD in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology in 2006 from the University of Tennessee. He has since moved on into a postdoctoral position as an ecologist in the EPA Ecosystems Research Division of the National Exposure Research Laboratory in Athens, Georgia. He's also an adjunct faculty member at Gainesville State College. Secondly, we have Fred Dubislager. He's a senior research associate at the University of Tennessee, and he's done that since 1998, for the Institute of Environmental Modeling. He supports the Risk Assessment Information System, as well as providing input to the SATA development team. He has worked in the health risk assessment field since 1993. Additionally, although he may not present much today, he's available to answer questions. We have Robert Stewart, who leads the development of SATA at the University of Tennessee and has been a senior research associate at the University of Tennessee since 1994 in the Institute of Environmental Modeling. And with that, I will turn it over to today's instructors until the Q&A sessions. You guys?
Thanks, Michael. As Michael said, this is the third in a series of seminars, and it focuses on the risk assessment portions of SATA. The first one was back in August, and it was sort of a general overview of all the capabilities of SATA. And then Robert gave a talk in March that focused on the spatial analysis features of SATA. And what this talk is going to go through and look at the risk assessment, some of the data issues, how they're imported, and then how that can be used to generate different types of risk assessment output, and how that can be used and sort of the, combined with spatial analysis features to be used in the remedial design portion of cleaning up a contaminated site. And then Fred's going to follow, I'm going to give the risk assessment piece, and Fred's going to follow up with a case study that illustrates some of these features. So this is the third in the series. These are all rather quick, breezy overviews of the software features. There are training sessions at the University of Tennessee. The next one is coming up in October from October 24th to the 26th. It's 3 days where you get a hands-on training type of session where you'll go through a lot of these capabilities in some detail. And October is a nice time to visit East Tennessee because of the Smoky Mountains and fall color and all that. So I'm giving the risk assessment talk because we developed a lot of the risk assessment capabilities while I was at the University of Tennessee, and I moved down to Athens, Georgia last year. Robert, being lead developer, is also on the line, and Fred, who's done a lot of worked with and for SATA, is also there, but he's developed a lot of the case studies, and he's the one who's going to be presenting that case study talk, as Michael mentioned. So if we proceed to slide 2 on human and ecological risk functions, what SATA does is a software package that integrates GIS capabilities, statistical spatial analysis, as well as general statistical capabilities and risk assessment methods into an overall setting that's more or less mostly designed for environmental assessment applications. So a number of features such as hypothesis testing, descriptive statistics, sample size calculations, sampling design, spatial remedial design, they're all there to support environmental assessments. And they're all tied to the risk assessment functions that you see here on this slide. In general, we follow US EPA methods for human health and ecological risk functions. We allow you on the human health side to calculate site-specific preliminary remediation goals. You can also bring in PRGs from specific EPA regions if you have those as part of your process for doing a risk assessment. So you can perform screening with those human health PRGs. We have compiled a rather large database for ecological benchmarks that ship with the SATA software that allow you to perform screening against a number of ecological benchmarks. We do exposure modeling for humans for 5 typical land use scenarios for human health risk assessment. And we also have a number of terrestrial species, so we do terrestrial exposure modeling on the eco side. SATA also ships with toxicity databases from the EPA for IRIS and HEAS for chemicals and radionuclides that allow you to calculate the risk from different chemicals and radionuclides. And also we have developed an access database that contains a number of the default exposure parameters for the different risk models. So those are there, and there's also extensive documentation in the form of a help file, which kind of pulls all those different parameters together and tells you where each value came from. And these are used to generate different types of risk output for use in documenting risk assessments. Commonly what's used is tables of screening and risk values. Those are very easy to generate within SATA using just by exporting two Excel files, and you can cut and paste into a Word document, for example. But we also use the GIS capabilities of the software to allow you to do point screening of different sample locations where you've collected. Also, you can use the interpolation methods that are available in SATA to do risk and dose mapping and generate sort of pictures of risk or screening results at the site. Moving on to slide 3, sample laboratory data. We often get hit with questions early on when we give these kind of talks about data, how it all works. So I'm going to lead off with that to sort of answer those questions first off. Generally, when you're using SATA for an environmental assessment, you're using data that's come from an analytical laboratory. So you're getting a spreadsheet that looks like what we have here on slide 3, and you can't just import this directly into a SATA file. There are some things that need to go on to get it in a proper format before you can import it into SATA, but it's not an arduous process. One of the primary things you have to do is you have to georeference your individual sample locations. You have to essentially provide X, Y, and Z coordinates for each one of your sample locations where you collect the data. That allows you to display the data results in the GIS. It's also possible to use transport model output results so that you can use the results of fate and transport modeling you've done at a site, and if you want to present those in a risk context, you can either have if your modeling software provides you with XYZ coordinates, you can use those as part of your import, or you can add them yourself as necessary. Moving on to slide 4, data formats. This gives you a little bit of detail on that formatting process to convert your analytical laboratory data to an imported file that can be brought into SATA. SATA accepts data in two different formats, either a comma delimited file, a so-called CSV file, or a Microsoft Access file. You will have added those X, Y, and Z via easing, northing, and depth fields to your data set, and then SATA also minimally requires a value, some sort of quantitative value to display associated with that sample location, and a name, which generally for environmental assessment applications refers to a chemical name. There are other forms of other types of column data that SATA recognizes as well. That includes media data, soil, sediment, surface water, groundwater, etc. These are used to let the risk assessment modules know which types of exposure assumptions to use when you go through and generate the risk assessment results. So those are also typically brought in when you're doing an environmental assessment. Also a detection field. A lot of times your data will come back from the laboratory with a less than indicator letting you know that it's non-detected, or perhaps some laboratory qualifiers which you then somehow have to interpret according to your setting as to whether it's considered detected or not. What SATA requires is that you simply add a field that's a detect field, and it's 0 if you're considering that particular sample to be non-detect and 1 if you're considering it to be a detect. Also, SATA will recognize dates, so if you have results of monitoring events that have occurred over time, then once it's in the software, you can do a query by date and just look at a range or a particular sampling event when you're exploring your data and performing risk assessment results. It can also bring in a chemical abstract system number that helps you when you have to link the contaminants you have in your data to the toxicity data that comes with SATA. Slide 5 is titled Data, and this is just a little disclaimer that lets you know that risk assessments are data driven. You know, SATA has a lot of these spatial interpolation capabilities, so you can make it appear that the site is well characterized, even though perhaps if you only have a few samples. So this is just a general statement that as your quality and confidence in data increases, then so does the quality and confidence in risk estimates. Alsata offers a number of these tools for reliable and effective data storage, visualization, etc. Ultimately, your risk results are still dependent upon the quality and quantity of the data. And there's a number of EPA guidance type documents, including data quality objectives, data quality assessment procedures to go through to make sure that you're doing everything correctly as you step through an environmental assessment. And in fact, SEDA offers some of those types of data analysis tools, which we'll discuss in a little bit. So once you've gone through, moving on to slide six, the interface slide, once you've been able to successfully import your data into SEDA, you come up with an interface that looks like this. You have an analysis box in the upper left-hand corner of the screenshot there. When you first bring in data, you have just a general analysis environment, but as you set up human health and ecological risk assessments by bringing in the toxicity and exposure data that you need to run those assessments, then you'll have drop-down choices there for human health and for eco. The second combo box there is the data type box. This lets you know what media you're looking at. So within the software, you're able to look at soil, sediment, surface water, groundwater, all the different media data that you've imported simply by selecting different drop-down values there. The one in the middle, the third one, data name box, that generally refers to the contaminant that you're looking at. When you're doing sum and risk results across a number of different contaminants, there's also an option there called pool data that allows you to look at some data results, for example, for human health, for all contaminants summed within a given land use scenario. There's also a labels box, which allows you to label the sample locations that are in the GIS window to the lower right. And there's a layers box, which allows you, in the software, you can define different vertical layers and then sort of go down through those vertical layers and see what your data looks like as you go deeper. There's also a 3D viewer for visualizing data in three dimensions. So that controls what you're viewing there in the results windows in terms of the data that you selected. There's also a number of features, a number of processes that you can run, and these are termed interviews. So in this screenshot on slide six, there's an interview called Plot My Data, which is just a simple view of the data for a contaminant that we've selected. But there are a number of other features, some of the which Robert discussed last time for different types of spatial interpolation. There's other methods for designing samples, et cetera. But as you select different types of interview processes, this controls the steps. That's in the steps window in the left-hand pane. Then you can simply go through, select different steps, it'll be highlighted red, and then you fill out the parameters in the parameters window there in the middle, and that will allow you to parameterize whatever interview process you're going through. So in this simple scenario, we're choosing our data, we've already selected the contaminant and the media that we're looking at. It has a pane there for data query, which means we're looking at all the data, we're not selecting sort of sub-data interval for our analysis, then we're making assumptions about how we're treating detects versus non-detects and proxies for non-detects and all that kind of stuff, and then we're displaying the data within the results window to the right. And as you play with SEDA, you'll see there's a bunch of different types of options as you go through the different steps that are available. Moving on to slide seven, basic data exploration. We're just hitting some of the high notes here before we get into the risk assessment. So once you've imported data into SEDA, you have the capabilities there in the upper left to visualize your data. Within the GIS context, you can bring in data layers that you've maybe perhaps developed or have from other software programs and see your data within the context of those layers. There's also data screening capabilities, so you can just plug in a value that you're concerned about for a contaminant that you're viewing and see which results, which sample locations are above that value. They'll be boxed as you see those orange and red ones are in the middle and the one sort of light green one there under the data screening screenshot. And these are also linked to the human health and ecological risk assessment capabilities, so you can see sample locations that are above some risk criterion that you might be concerned about. The third screenshot there is spatial aggregation. It allows you to create a polygon and select an area of your site, for example, an exposure area for human health or eco, and then run different types of summary statistics and risk models on that site. You can also do a spatial data query and just extract the data from that area, as you see in the lower right, and we'll talk about some of the statistical capabilities here on the next slide. And as I mentioned earlier, there's also some 3D visualization capabilities for both sample locations and also based on 3D interpolation results. Proceeding to slide 8 on classical statistics, there is a number of guidance documents from EPA, data quality objectives, data quality assessments, which sort of control that data evaluation portion of the risk assessment process. And we looked at that guidance and incorporated a number of those common statistical methods into the software. So here on in the background of the forms here, we have a big slide for univariate statistics. What this does is, let's say you selected a subarea of your site, which is considered a certain exposure area. You can simply select or deselect different statistics, and it'll return those statistics for all your contaminants in a spreadsheet view, which you can then export to Excel and use as part of your data evaluation write-up for your assessment. We also have some non-parametric hypothesis test procedures, in particular the Wilcoxon rank sum test and the sign test. These are hypothesis tests that are in the EPA guidance for comparing the data within the exposure area to some sort of cleanup criterion, whether it's risk-based or otherwise, at your site. So you can perform those hypothesis tests within the software. Also, there's a sign test sample size and power form. There's a power curve type form. What this does is links to DQO type of processes for declaring a decision criterion at the site, a cleanup, a standard deviation for what you expect from your data, and then decision errors that you might experience at your site. And it'll give you sample sizes that are required to clean up according to those criteria. Then you can also you, from those sample sizes, actually go straight into a sample design. We say that also has capabilities there for just laying out your samples on your screen, and you can then return those coordinates and send them out to the field for collecting samples. Also, there's some other types of basic classical statistical procedures, such as data histograms, cumulative distribution functions, etc., that are all within the software. So moving on to slide 9, human health risk. What SEDA does is implement U.S. EPA methods for conducting human health risk assessments. In particular, we implement exposure modeling for human health risk assessment for 5 different land use scenarios, and with it ship a number of default exposure parameters from the EPA, as well as EPA iris and HEAS toxicity databases. This allows you to calculate site-specific PRGs because all those parameters, although they come as defaults, are also modifiable to make it fit for the site that you're working at to reflect any site-specific guidance or values that you need to implement, and can be used to generate the tabular output as well as graphical output for risk assessments. So if we move on to slide 10, these are some of the specific risk assessment functions that are in SEDA. Includes a setting up human health process, which we'll talk about in a second. You can view the parameters that you've imported. You can set the statistics that you'll use for an exposure area, and then you can generate preliminary remediation goals and perform those different types of visual output. So setting up human health occurs after you've created a SEDA file. As part of the distribution for SEDA, and again, it's a free product, so you just download it from the web page, install it on your machine, and part of that distribution is an access data file of the iris and HEAS toxicity data. And what you would then do is go through the setup process, identify the toxicological and scenario parameters database that come with SEDA, and then go through the process of matching the contaminants at your site with the contaminants that are in that toxicity database. And once you're done with that, it imports the toxicity information as well as the exposure information into your SEDA file, and then as you transfer your SEDA file around different machines, for example, or work with different sites that have different sets of assumptions, your saved set of toxicology and scenario exposure parameters will be associated with that given file. On to slide 12. This lets you view some of the forms and the parameters for human health risk input. As I said earlier, there's different media available for human health. It's soil, sediment, surface water, and groundwater. And the five exposure scenarios are residential, industrial, recreational, agricultural, and excavation. And on the large form screenshot on slide 12 in the back there, that shows the exposure inputs. So you can see across the top we have five different land use scenarios, and going down the left we have a bunch of different inputs to the exposure models. And so if you need to change these, it's just simply a matter of selecting that particular box and changing the value and hitting save. And if you need to, you can sort of change the intent of certain scenarios. For example, you can go through with the recreational scenario and change that to a trespasser scenario or some other scenario that you want to work with at the site that's different from the five we have here. The different exposure pathways include external exposure, ingestion, inhalation, dermal contact, as well as some typical food chain type of exposure scenarios. In the lower right, we have contaminant-specific physical parameters snapshot. This allows you to go through all the different chemicals that are in the database and look at values such as bioaccumulation, volatilization, particular emission factors. We have defaults for those that ship with the software, but you can, of course, change those right here and make changes and save your changes. And then in the same way, sort of in the lower and the middle, you can view your toxicity data, see your slope factors, reference doses, reference concentrations, all that kind of stuff. And again, make changes if there's some sort of update or you have site-specific values that you need to input after you've negotiated all that with regulators. So moving on to slide 13, this is standard steps of a human health risk assessment. As you can see, we've covered some of these steps here. We have a number of data evaluation capabilities that are in SEDA. We have the toxicity data that ships with the software. We have sets of exposure assessments and algorithms for calculating exposure. And these are all combined into a risk characterization output that can be used as the basis for writing up the risk characterization portion of the human health risk assessment. And one of the strengths of SEDA are the ability to retain that risk information as you move from the risk assessment into remediation. In other words, there's methods to efficiently look at spatial distribution of contamination, of risk, and use that to design a selective remediation scenario that is most efficient at getting down to some desired risk threshold. Moving on to slide 14, this is a sort of graphical conceptual model for risk assessment for exposure. This is just to illustrate that what SEDA does is allows you to bring in your analytical data from that you've analyzed in the lab, for example, and calculate some of those direct exposure pathways. In addition, we can also use the results of bait and transport modeling for pathways such as groundwater flow or releases from spills or source terms or through aerial dispersal. You can take output from those models and also bring them into SEDA for visualization and for risk assessment. But SEDA does not in itself contain significant groundwater models or air models. There's a plurality of models out there for doing that, and we're not going to make any decisions about what you might need to use at your site. So while SEDA does visualization and risk assessment for some of those direct contact type of scenarios, there are other situations where you would need to do some modeling on your own, and either present those results separately or bring them into SATA for visualization and for risk assessment. And so if you look at the next slide, slide 15, this is more of a risk assessment type of conceptual model. For a chemical release spill, you can see the primary source, secondary source. Essentially, SATA would not be used for these first initial steps. It would be used for exposure media and for potential receptors and exposure routes and pathways there on the right-hand side of figure 15. So once we've brought all that data in, brought the toxicity information in and parameterized the exposure assessment, then you're in the risk characterization phase. And here's where SATA is very helpful in terms of calculating risks by media and by land use. You can quantify risks for each chemical. You can sum across multiple chemicals, including applying the one-head risk equation for higher risk values. You can also select and deselect different exposure pathways to conform to the exposure pathways that are significant at your site. We don't have any Monte Carlo uncertainty type of capabilities, but you can simply go through and modify individual parameters and see. Sometimes you get arguments about exactly what is the value to use for some particular exposure parameter. You can get in there look at those and see whether those results are significant or not when you're generating your risk results. So in general, these are used to identify chemicals, media, and land uses of concern, and of course also to clean up goals and clean up areas as part of a risk characterization. Slide 17 shows some of these different types of human health risk output. Once you've created your exposure scenarios that you're interested in for the scenarios that you have at your site, as well as the contaminants you have at your site, you can calculate PRGs and do PRG screens, as you see in those two screenshots on the upper left of this slide 17. And what you see here is different checks under the pathways in the middle for ingestion, inhalation, dermal, etc., as well as all. You can simply turn on and off the results for PRGs simply by clicking those. In the upper right there, you have a bunch of colored buttons. These represent different land use scenarios. So by clicking on a residential or the factory there for industrial or the barn for agricultural, etc., you change the exposure assumptions used to generate those PRGs. And then we also have some formatting options and on the left. In addition to the upper right, you can use these same types of forms to generate risk assessment output, carcinogenic risk or non-carcinogenic hazard. So you define an area at your site with a polygon that contains a number of sample points. SATA will calculate, for example, the min of the upper confidence limit and the max detected value. Use that as the exposure concentration and step through the risk assessment process to generate and then sum the chemical risks or hazards for the data you have at your site. So that's for areas. And then for more visualization, you can see the risk-based spatial screens in the lower right where you can identify specific sample locations that are above PRG, for example, that you've calculated for your site. And you can also map risk like you see in the lower left of this same slide where you're some in risk across a number of different contaminants and actually contouring risk across the site to look at areas where you have problems. Just a note about exposure statistics. SATA, there's when you're dealing with exposure areas, there are a few different choices, and those include using a mean value, an upper confidence limit, a max detected value, the min of the max and the upper confidence limit. We don't have the pro-UCL95 exposure stuff in SATA at this point. It is something we'd like to add in the future. Slide 19, there on the help file and user's manual, there's extensive documentation of all, not just how to use the human health and other portions of SATA, but also the parameterization of SATA. Back to the original EPA references about where some ingestion value came from, etc. That is all in this help file that ships with SATA, and it's a very useful document. It's also in printed form as a user's guide at the link at the bottom of page 19. I'll go to slide 20. This is just to say that the human health risk assessment, of course, the SATA isn't completely up to date. We're aware of some limitations, and the University of Tennessee has been pursuing funding to add some of these features to the software. That includes the Pro UCL 95 stuff that I had discussed before. Additional toxicology information such as target organs that are often reported as part of a risk assessment. The Part D reporting format from RAGS, which allows you to export risk results in this specific format. Screening PRGs as benchmarks refers to the region-specific PRGs. You can bring Region 3 or EPA Region 10 benchmarks into SATA and use those using another feature of SATA called the custom benchmark screening, but we like to bring those into the actual human health portion of the analysis here to help identify which contaminants need to have quantitative risk calculations done for them. And there's also some small air and dermal modifications that we need to add to be up to date with the EPA guidance. So that's slide 20. I'll stop there, and Mike, how are we with questions or anything like that?
Well, Tom, I haven't received any questions through text yet, but we can pause here a second to see if anybody has any questions that's listening in over the conference line.
Yes, I have a question from Region 5. You mentioned that the software does different kinds of interpolations. Does it do cubic interpolation, which I believe is mentioned in Owl Gilbert's book, and I believe it has to do with estimating the concentration term, if I'm not mistaken?
So the last, I believe that this talk is archived from back in March, Michael, the Roberts talk, that goes into detail on the different types of interpolation methods that are available in SATA. These include nearest neighbor, inverse distance, which might be a form of a cubic, the power function that you're talking about being used for interpolation, natural neighbor, as well as some Kriging methods. So I'm not going to get into that sort of discussion here just for time reasons, but we do have that talk archived on the CLUIN here from Robert Stewart's March talk. And we also have some significant resources on the web page that allows you to look at the interpolation methods that are available in SATA.
Okay. Another question I have is, what are some important updates to SATA that have to be updated periodically, like databases, for example? And are these updates something that the user must do, or is that something that would come with newer versions of SATA?
So we re-release... When there's a new release of SATA, then that also entails a new, for example, toxicity database. If you have older versions of human health risk assessment files, for example, using an older version of SATA, there's no internet connection that'll go out and make sure that you're up to date. So that is something that periodically Fred, I think, is doing this. Fred will put a more recent version of, for example, the toxicology database, and you can go out, download that database, and redo the human health setup and have access to those updated toxicological information.
All right, thank you.
So Tom, we did have a question now. I'm not sure if you might have sort of covered this with what you just answered. The question is, did you include updated PPRTV toxicity values in the toxicity database?
Brad, do you want to handle that one?
The answer is yes.
All right. I guess if there's no other questions on the phone line, we can move on.
I have just one question real quick. Does SATA include any evaluation of the vapor intrusion indoor air pathway? And if not, is there any plan to do some type of evaluation for that? I mean, currently that tends to be a risk-driving pathway if it's present at a site.
No, that would be something that would have to be done external to SATA. I mean, SATA can... No, that is something that we've discussed adding, but SATA does not have that pathway.
Okay, thank you.
And in general, along those lines, SATA doesn't do transport modeling of any type.
All right, on to slide 21, ecological capabilities of SATA. So the eco is organized in a similar fashion as the human health. SATA implements EPA methods for conducting risk assessments. It's shipped with a large benchmark database that can be used for screening. It does exposure modeling for a number of terrestrial species. It does not have aquatic modeling capabilities for exposure, although it does have a number of aquatic benchmarks. And contains EPA default exposure parameters, mostly from the soil screening level guidance that was issued by the EPA some years back. And the output are similar to human health, tabular screening and risk results, point screens, as well as risk and dose mapping. Slide 22. This shows that the ecological functionality is similar to human health. You go through an import process where you import, you link benchmarks, for example, from the database that ships with SATA to the chemicals that you have in your file from that you've imported from your data set. You can then view different parameters that you brought in, including physical parameters for contaminants, exposure parameters, etc. You can look at histograms and tables of benchmark values for your ecological benchmarks. Screening and exposure statistics works in a similar way as to human health. And then you generate those area results for areas, exposure areas you've identified, and for screening results as well as for terrestrial exposure modeling. Slide 23, set up ecological risk. This allows you to identify in the source benchmarks database that comes with SATA. You'll match, you know, whatever chemical you have to the chemicals that are in this master list that we've compiled from a number of different regulatory sources of benchmarks, and that imports that information to your file along with the exposure information. And again, it's portable with your SATA file when you move it around from different machines or make changes to subsequent files, etc. Slide 24, hazard versus risk assessment. This is just a quick note to let you know that for the most part, what SATA is doing for EPA types of risk assessment is hazard types of screening assessment. Most of the capabilities, and to be honest, most of the ecological risk assessments that are done are more limited to comparing media concentrations to ecological benchmarks from a variety of sources depending upon where you are and what type of receptors that you're concerned with. The more higher tiers of the ecological risk assessment, we support those through exposure modeling for terrestrial receptors, but there are issues that you get into with population modeling and aquatic exposure and all that you would have to look at other types of programs to implement those when you're doing higher tiers of an ecological risk assessment. Slide 25, benchmark screening. The benchmark data sets that are in SATA are media specific. You can also implement a hierarchy of them. So we may have like 10 to 15 different benchmark sources for a given media, like soil or sediment or something. You can go through, since all benchmark sources don't have benchmarks for all possible contaminants, you can go through and specify sort of a hierarchy of benchmark sources that you're interested in. And it'll go to the first one, then to the second one, third one, et cetera, and stop once it finds a benchmark source for that contaminant. So that's useful, so you don't have to keep messing around with selecting different benchmark sources all the time when you're screening more than one contaminant. And we'll do displays of ratios, which are of questionable value, but you can see where there are high exceedances of given benchmark values. And in general, we have all different types of benchmark sources in the database, including those from tox testing, extrapolations from other existing benchmarks, as well as some simulation studies. And all that is in the help file. There's a high level detail on all the different benchmarks that are ecological benchmarks that are in the software and what their sources are. And they're not all limited to the U.S. We do have some from Canada as well as some from Europe. So moving on to slide 26, ecological benchmark screening. What this does is shows you the type of capabilities that you have once you've imported a your contaminant-specific benchmarks into SEDA. The screen here on the back right shows freshwater benchmark sources for seven different contaminants that you might have in your at your site. And then it's simply a matter of selecting or deselecting the different benchmark sources to display that value in the table there. Also, in the lower right, we have a histogram. And this is a very, very nice feature if you're an ecological risk assessor. Because what it's essentially doing is for a given contaminant, it's going out there and it's pulling all of the benchmarks from our database. And so you can sort of see very quickly the variability that exists in the different benchmark sources for that given contaminant. So it's a very nice visualization of, you know, what type of consensus or non-consensus there are on the benchmarks for that particular contaminant across all these different sources. And, of course, sometimes there's good reason for there to be good variability for different areas of the country, for example, or different types of endpoints that are being assessed with that particular screening benchmark source. So you expect to see some variability there. Moving on to slide 27, map results, screens, and ratios. What this shows is screening concentrations against benchmarks at each sample location. So what you do is you go through this little form process, and here on the upper right-hand form is all the source benchmarks. You can then select which ones you want to use in the screening process. And then for whatever contaminant you're looking at, it'll go through that list until it finds a benchmark for that source. And then you can see in the GIS capture there that we pulled for arsenic the Dutch intervention criteria of 40 milligrams per kilogram. And then within the display window, it's boxed those samples that are above that benchmark source. And it also works with the interpolation capabilities to look at areas of concern. Slide 28, SEDA terrestrial dose modeling. What SEDA does is, again, it implements those SSL, the EPA soil screening level methods for calculating dose from different terrestrial exposure pathways. And we also have different slots saved for females, males, and juveniles of each species. So you can look at sexually dimorphic variation in exposures, as well as differences in exposures to juveniles of a given species if you have significantly different input parameters for exposure for those. And so the general process is to use a polygon to identify the home range of the species you're looking at. You would then select whether you're doing an SSL analysis or a particular female, male, or juvenile, and you'd select the exposure pathways like you did in human health and return those in either a table form or as a map. So we see that in slide 29. In the upper left is contaminant parameters for terrestrial modeling. So you can select, for example, you can specify the bioaccumulation factors and the other types of inputs that are contaminant specific into the terrestrial exposure models. The lower left figure B is a screenshot for a given species that you might be doing analysis for. So you can parameterize terrestrial species. And then this can generate two different types of ecological output, either, for example, here an interpolated map of daily dose to a given weasel in this case. Here we have PCB dose for an area near Knoxville from a couple different exposure parameters. Or you can generate tabular results as we see in figure D. And slide 30 more or less goes through that process. You'd simply select from a drop-down menu show daily exposure dose. After you selected your species and the sex and the pathways you want to run, you generate that table of output. You can print it. You can export to Excel, et cetera. It's a very quick and easy way to document risk assessment results once you have everything that you need. Slide 31 goes into some of the eco limitations that we have. There's additional benchmarks that you know, any benchmarks that are out there that you need that aren't currently in SATA, we'll be glad to add them. I think we have like 45 or 50 benchmark sources right now. So it's for the benchmarks themselves, it's a very useful resource. We've also added some radionuclide benchmarks and dose assessment methods in the recent past. And we're looking at different types of terrestrial movement and habitat models to add for this next release of SATA 5. With that, I'm going to skip over slides 32 and 33 because I'm a little bit behind on time. Let's go into some of the movement models that we're looking to implement for version 5. And we'll go ahead and take questions there for any ecological type of questions.
This kind of goes back to changing screening values. There's a two-part question here. I think the first part you answered, you know, you talked about how you could change some of the values. The question is, can screening values be changed for local jurisdictions or for other from other agencies? And does this apply for assumptions used in calculating the exposure as well?
So, yes, you can, for example, modify all the exposure assumptions that go into either the human health or the ecological risk assessment modules. We have another component of SATA that we call custom analysis that allows you to bring in any source of screening values and do these types of screening for something that doesn't come with SATA or that, in fact, isn't human health or ecologically related. So if you have a local jurisdiction which just says that here's our database of cleanup values that we want you to use, you can bring those into SATA using a tool called custom analysis, which you can look for in the user's guide to see how that works. But so, yes, the answer is yes.
Okay, and I know that we had a question earlier about vapor intrusion, and so if you had some, you know, risk-based values for soil and groundwater that had to do with vapor intrusion, you could import those values into SATA and use it in, for vapor intrusion in that sense, but not air.
Correct.
Okay. The next question is, regarding SATA, how is this related to the hazardous analysis critical control point planning process used by the U.S. FWS, it must be the Fish and Wildlife Service?
I am unfamiliar with, I don't know, if Carl DePaul's out there and wants to, I don't know, I'm not familiar with that process by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so I can't speak to that question in particular, but a lot of assessment methods that are out there are very similar to the human health and eco that are promulgated by OSWR or whatever through the EPA. So it is used a lot outside of the typical EPA type of assessment, including internationally.
Okay. Let's skip to what is the reliability of these SATA risk assessments? Are they admissible in court? And I mean, I guess that's a question that Carl also asked.
Okay, so we've done extensive verification of our risk assessment results, and some of that documentation is available on the webpage. I don't know. I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't be admissible in court proceedings. We participated. Robert, do you want to talk about the ETV process and all that and what goes on with verification? Robert Stewart, are you out there?
Can you hear me, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm double-checking my pound six there. I mean, as Tom was mentioning, there is a fairly extensive verification document available for the current version of SATA that's out there. And to the extent that we have verified those numbers, I would say that they are admissible as much as anything else is. The EPA did do an ETV office, actually did a verification statement on SATA. It was an older version of SATA. It's actually a version 1, I think, of SATA. And that's also available on the website to look at how they sort of did an independent review of it. I mean, as to whether it's admissible in court or not, I'm certainly no lawyer. Can't really answer that for sure, but I can say that these numbers have been looked at fairly closely and have been compared with the Risk Assessment Information System numbers in the past to verify that they are consistent with that system as well.
Okay. Okay, I've got another one here. For groundwater evaluations in which multiple sampling rounds have been collected, does SATA depict a single concentration for each given well over time and then compute the risk for that well location based on the chosen value used?
Okay, this is Sarah Levinson. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to an earlier slide, slide 6. What this does is it shows the interface and it shows, in particular, the data query tab where you go through and actually select your data. So first off, if you're dealing with multiple data rounds, you can select individual dates by selecting the data interval that incorporates that one date range. And then for when you have more than one sample result over time, you essentially control using duplicate data there what the exposure concentration is for that one point for the analysis. For example, you can tell it to use all values. You can say look at only detected values, or you can say use the most recent value or the most recent detected value. And then if you still have more than one, you can tell SATA to use the maximum or to use the average or the minimum if you want to do that. So essentially the user controls those types of issues. Mike, you want me to? So we also have a question from Elena Foley. Does it display combined effects of contaminants? It does for human health. You can do summing of risk for human health, but not for eco. You can present tables of different analysis results, but it doesn't really look at a combination of doesn't sum across contaminants for eco.
Okay. Is the home range foraging range polygon drawn in is it based on inputs for species, or do you have to draw a polygon to identify the site area?
You have to draw a polygon.
Okay. Does SATA estimate the plant uptake of contaminants from soil concentrations? And does it provide a tabular output for the terrestrial exposure assessment to view?
SATA does estimate plant uptake based upon values you enter for bioaccumulation, and it does provide a tabular output. I kind of skipped over that slide real quickly. I'll go find that real quick. That is slide number 30, where you could have multiple contaminants selected there under slide 30, and it would give you tabular output for ecological risk. And if you go back to slide 29, you can see under the caption in the upper left, A, that there's different values that you can input for soil to plant, for foliage, for example. And then you could put in your own BAF. You can do it based upon the octanol water partitioning coefficient, and you'd enter the KOW there at the top. Or you can input your own site-specific regression relationship to control that soil-to-plant bioconcentration. All right.
Okay. Let's see if we have anybody on the phone line that wants to ask a question here.
Yes, I have another question from Chicago. For human health, does SATA have bioavailability factors for chemicals and metals? And if not, can this be entered into SATA as an additional parameter in the exposure equation?
What specifically do you refer to when you talk about bioavailability? There are parameters that you modify that are chemical specific, such as GI absorption and all that. So I think that those parameters are covered in the general EPA guidance that we implement. So there are bioavailability controls that are specific to the pathway that you're dealing with, but they are chemical specific, and they can be, they do come with default values in SATA, and they can be changed. And they're actually linked to the Risk Assessment Information System. Fred, do you want to say something about the RAIS real quick?
No, I was going to when I began my talk.
Oh, okay. we'll wait then.
So you say that you do have some default values available for various chemicals for bioavailability?
That's correct.
Okay.
In terms of gastrointestinal absorption?
Right, that's what I was referring to.
Okay.
So we do oral and dermal. We derive dermal toxicity values from oral toxicity values.
Thank you.
I had a question about the toxicity values.
Okay.
This IRIS is now providing a range of values, for example, for benzene. And what does SEDA do in that situation? Do you have a preference towards one or the other, or do you do it on a case-by-case basis?
Well, yeah, we have a preference, and you can change it if you don't like it.
Okay, great.
Are there any other questions over the phone lines? All right, guys, let's move on here.
Okay. So I'm on slide 34, and what I'm going to do is just create a little bridge here to Fred's case study. So one of the big advantages of using SEDA is the combination of spatial analysis with risk assessment. A lot of times when you use a risk assessment in a traditional manner, you calculate so many statistics for an area, go through, generate your risk results. You're done with the risk assessment, but then it doesn't necessarily carry over into the remedial design portion of the site. But SEDA links these risk assessment methods to the spatial interpolation methods explicitly and allows you to construct spatial maps of risk, which can be used in a lot of different ways. So in slide 35, you can maximize use limited resources to efficiently collect data. In other words, there are sampling designs within SEDA that can utilize the risk information to sort of optimally site the locations of additional samples given the results of a risk assessment. You can also extrapolate from known areas to cover data gaps spatially. You can account for spatial processes related to exposure. But the big thing that we're going to talk about is sort of using those spatial methods with risk assessment to determine areas of concern at the site and how to sort of efficiently determine the area or volume of site that needs to be cleaned up in order to meet some given risk standard. So in slide 36 is just a quick blurb about selective remediation. This is where we're taking a spatial interpolation model from the original data. We're applying some sort of cleanup criteria. It could be risk-based, or it could just be some site-specific cleanup criteria that we pulled out of a hat, and then some spatial scale inputs, and generating a spatially explicit remedial design with associated areas or volume of contamination. So slide 37 is just a quick thing on spatial estimation. Generally, a site is gridded at each location. We're coming up with an interpolated value based upon a spatially and directionally weighted average of samples in a nearby location, and then that's conducted for each grid cell at a site in order to estimate a concentration, resulting screening result, or risk or hazard result, etc. And then those can be used in, for example, the gray area in slide 38 to give you an area or volume of exceedance and what the coordinates of those areas are for remediation. Slide 39 just lists the website. It's, again, SEDA is free. You just you can do a Google search on SEDA if you like, and then pull the software that way if you haven't yet. And Mike, maybe we can just jump straight into the case study rather than stop for questions at this point.
Sure. Yeah.
So moving on to slide 41, these are just some online sources of case studies that have used SEDA both in terms of risk assessment and spatial analysis capabilities to help with specific cleanups. And Fred is now going to talk about a SATA implementation at the Data Witherspoon site up there in Tennessee, starting on slide 42. Fred, take it away.
Okay, thank you. Many of us have done risk assessments for years and years and years, and then people take them and they go do things with them. Well, if you're tired of that, what SATA lets you do is almost take the risk assessment into the field from start to finish with sample designs, site characterization, and to risk assessment, and then to the decision of where to dig, how much to dig, what concentration are you going to chase. And if we go on to slide 43, David Witherspoon's site, the 901 site in particular, 10.5 acres, it ran for a number of years, received many violations. They would run rail cars full of contaminated scrap metal and have people sort it out and recycle it. He eventually was shut down in 1993, and we have contaminated soil, sediment, groundwater, and surface water in a residential setting. The next slide. The things on the left are the things that SATA can do, and the items on the right are what we use SATA for. So we did site characterization, all of our data aggregation and modeling, 3D risk assessment modeling. We calculated the removal volumes. We used a lot of the decision analysis tools. We did secondary sample designs and verification sample designs when we were done, and we also screened the data. And go to the next slide. This should be a map, and it has little black dots all over it. Please note the finger up at the north. That area had a lot of samples in it. And then look right in the center of the site. You'll see a few samples were taken. But all in all, we have a lot of data at this site. So we'll go to the next slide. The next slide is a point risk map, which was our first step. Note that this is the This is the 0 to 1 foot layer, and it's color-coded, and the data labels there are the actual risk assessment. Let's go to the next slide, and that shows a contoured risk. That's one of the things that SATA does. So we interpolated the risk across the site, and if you go to the next one, which I see now is slide 7, that gives you the gray area is where you had to dig to meet our risk goal. As you can see, almost the entire surface of the site failed. So we began to look at the subsurface. Go to the next slide. Here's an example of the 5 to 6 foot layers. The one on the left was done with a decision tool called Block Scale, and the one on the right was done with Site Scale. Block Scale tells you every single estimated point that fails your decision criteria, and Site Scale gives you a site average, in other words, an exposure unit concept. So we were able to look at total removal volumes and our budget and determine what was the most cost-effective way to meet our goal and the most defensible. So we said you need to dig, you know, like 10 foot in this spot, 4 foot in this spot, and we came up with a 3D map of where the excavation had to take place. Let's go to the next slide, is number 9.
50.
Okay.
Slide 50 to everyone else.
Okay. And the tools that were useful were the overburden calculation, which is an engineering term. You know, if you tell them to dig a 10-foot hole, an engineer is going to ask you, well, what benching angle did you use? And we used benching angles, and we had various interpolation models that we did. We calculated our volumes. And if you go to the next slide, this is the finger to the north that I asked you to visually remember. And you can see the nice, pretty beach sand there on the left part and the very black, contaminated-looking dirt on the right. Where we had a lot of data, we hit it exactly correct, and the verification samples proved that we got rid of the contamination. It turned out that this site was built upon a marble foundry, and in this finger of this property, there was actually yellow cake on the ground above it. And then if you go to the next slide, you'll see a large trench going right through the center of the site where I asked you to look, and there wasn't very much data, and they actually rerouted the creek through the site, and we actually found the old creek bottom, which is what you're looking at there. So, like was pointed out earlier, this is a data-driven tool. If you have, if your data is nice and tight together, you have a good chance of getting it correct, and if it's sparse, you can miss something as big as an entire creek that used to go through your site. But go to the next slide, please. This is, today, this is the finger up at the north. It's all been remediated within budget and within the time desired using SEDA to help with a lot of those decision tools. And if you take the next slide, that's where the creek used to be. And the next slide is looking from the top of the site all the way down the 10 acres towards the residence in the main road, which you see the houses down there on the right. So this is a real-world example of using SEDA from start to finish as the primary risk assessment tool, and we got it done. Any questions?
Yes, I have a question from Chicago.
Okay.
You said that SEDA can assist in sampling and where to sample and so on. I was just wondering, how is SEDA's capability similar to VSP, Visual Sample Plan software? I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. And did you use VSP as a source of comparison for SEDA to see how similar or different your results would be compared to VSP?
The answer is yes. We ran VSP side by side with SEDA, and we used them to verify each other, actually.
Oh, okay.
On this site. We did.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
This is Robert. If you can hear me, the question about VSP is SEDA sort of how does SEDA compare to VSP? VSP has quite a lot more sample designs, particularly the initial sample designs than SEDA does. The VSP developers did develop some of the hotspot search routines that are in SEDA, and SEDA has a lot of the standard sort of random sample designs, grid designs, unaligned grid designs. We actually have a three-dimensional extension of the hotspot search as well. SEDA sort of has their emphasis, our emphasis is a little bit more on the secondary sampling designs, which say, well, you know, I have done a characterization of this site. Here is a spatial model. How might I improve my decision? Where could I take a few more samples in order to improve or refine that decision? And so there's sort of a suite of secondary sample designs with varying objectives that are available in SEDA to do that.
We have a question from that came in from online. Have you ever used SEDA to characterize unexploded ordnance or munitions and explosive compounds at a military base? If so, what examples might you have?
We have never used it for that reason. We're not sure how many of our users might have done that. Unexploded munitions is a tricky thing. There really isn't, at a very localized scale, there isn't any per se spatial continuity. It's not like something that got spilled over or is sort of continuously varying across space. It's either there or it's not. Sort of like spilling a bunch of marbles on the floor. But at a larger scale, sort of a zone type scale, there are trends. If things are shot downrange in a particular way, then there is a particular pattern that you might be able to discern and use a spatial model for doing that. We did not engineer SATA specifically to handle that situation. Now, I do know that, going back to VSD, I do believe that VSD has some initial sample designs. I think I may misspeak here, but I think they do have some initial sample designs for just that purpose, sort of transect, you know, crisscrossing a site with, I guess, a magnetometer type thing to look for those. I mean, you can certainly use SATA to import those results into SATA and get a visual display on those, and you can do a sort of a search for spatial continuity within those with those results, and certainly could contour it. Although I'm not sure exactly what a contour map would mean, really.
Perhaps the spatial interpolation features aren't that applicable to UXO, but SATA does have some hotspot search sample design type of approaches that do have some, are related to some of the UXO approaches for looking at that. Just throw that out there.
Is there any thought to when we could expect RAGS Part D risk reporting formats that might be incorporated into SATA?
We are hoping to get some funding for that shortly after we release version 5 of SATA, which is going to be in October. We'll follow up as soon as we get that done with a 5.1. As soon as possible, that we'll have that format in it. I can't predict with any accuracy when 5.1 might come out, but we're hoping months.
Are there any questions from people listening in over the phone line?
Well, this is Fred again. Anybody can reach me at the Risk Assessment Information System. Just log in and go to the bottom of any page, and you can email me about any toxicity questions or other human health questions. And the human health toxicity and chemical-specific databases that are in SATA come from the RAIS, and the ecological benchmarks that are on the RAIS come from SATA. And if anybody has any more questions about how we work together, I'll be happy to entertain those at any time.
I had one more quick question. Does SATA look, I guess SATA does not look at the fish ingestion pathway?
It does.
It does? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And one more. How does SATA compare to ResRad? I saw you had some RAD assessment in there. How does that compare to ResRad?
The difference is SATA doesn't give you dose.
Okay.
That's the big difference. So SATA doesn't do dose currently.
But for the agricultural pathway, you'd look at the same type of scenarios, same type of inputs and stuff?
Yeah, for agricultural, SATA does beef and milk and vegetables, I believe.
There's an element of transport modeling in ResRad that SATA does not do too, in terms of long-lived radionuclide contaminants and sort of simplified fate and transport assumptions that SATA implements the EPA methods for risk assessment with the heat slope factors, et cetera, which are different than the dose conversion factors and the dose assessment methods that, like Fred was talking about.
Okay, so basically you follow EPA versus DOE's.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Sorry. Are there any other questions? Well, if there are no other questions, we encourage you to fill out the feedback form and remind you that there's a link to additional resources on the last slide of the presentation. There's also a quick way from that from there to the feedback form, and from there, after you fill out your feedback form, if you wish to have a receipt of your attendance, you can print out the confirmation form that is displayed after you fill out the feedback form. And again, I'd like to thank our presenters today, and with that, thank you, and thanks for sitting in on the Clue-In webinars.